This week on Life and Faith.
It's quite a privilege being a nurse because you are immediately trusted. But that trust means that you then get to come into those more intimate places with people. And this might sound very strange, but one of the most intimate places you can be with someone is at the moment of their death, where the focus is on that person, where they are valued, where they are celebrated for who they are, to partner with them as they end this life and go to the next. I can't put into words what that moment's like, but it's a very special, intimate moment.
We have entered into an amusing ourselves to death moment in history.
It doesn't make sense to me. If there is God, God's supposed to be free.
I was 100% sure that I was sacrificing on the altar of truth my only chance for happiness in this world.
Miracles don't necessarily change anybody's mind. They just get their attention.
And so I had to run with my child on my back, the ISA army coming behind us.
I said, gee, Uncle George, this is luxurious for a communist. Son, he said, nothing's too good for the worker, nothing.
Welcome to Life and Faith from CPX. I'm Simon Smart. Today I'm joined by Natasha Moore, who's calling in from her place of isolation at home. How are you, Natasha?
I'm doing all right. I'm wearing my UGG boots to work every day, Simon. So, yep. You know, doing fine.
It's a good time. Now, for many of us, the face of the COVID crisis, the figures captured people's imaginations more than perhaps any other, is the nurse. Extraordinarily, the World Health Organization declared 2020 to be the International Year of the Nurse. Now, they could not have known how appropriate that would turn out to be.
It was a moment the country came together to say thank you to those who take care of us. It was an unprecedented show of pride in the men and women on the front line of a battle that threatens us all.
I've today left hospital after a week in which the NHS has saved my life, no question. If I mention in particular two nurses who stood by my bedside for 48 hours when things could have gone either way.
By the thousands, they keep coming to hotspots desperately in need of help. Some call them nurses. In these challenging times, heroes will do.
The reason it's the year of the nurse is because it's 200 years since the birth of Florence Nightingale, the woman who kind of made the modern nursing profession. She is someone who we really, really wanted to include in our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined, only that didn't quite work out, alas.
Didn't make it in, but it did get into the book, and you made sure of that. But what was it, Natasha, that you would wish people to know about Florence Nightingale?
Yeah, she wasn't being left out of the book. I think what I love about her is that she just very much defied expectations. And she keeps doing that, actually. Think Florence Nightingale and you should think formidable. You know, think first female member of the Royal Statistical Society rather than just the image of the lady with the lamp gliding along hospital corridors during the Crimean War, mopping the brow of the fallen soldier, like this stereotype of femininity. I feel like if you know any nurses, formidable is still the word for them, right?
Yeah, sure. They're definitely the kind of people you want to have around in a crisis, which, given we're in the middle of a massive global one, it seems appropriate for us to celebrate them today.
Yeah, so this episode is kind of an ode to nurses and what they do for all of us. We got to speak with a bunch of them.
By the way, these nurses, we should say, are speaking for themselves, not on behalf of their employers. And Natasha and I aren't going to say too much in this episode. We really want you to hear what nursing is all about in their own words.
We bring you then six nurses in five parts. Part one, the call.
Why did I become a nurse? So I'll tell you the true story. I actually filled in my application for university incorrectly. I wanted to be an engineer, and in those days you actually wrote down the codes of the university you wanted to go to, and I wanted to study mechanical engineering at the University of New South Wales, but instead I wrote the code for nursing for university at MacArthur. And I ended up getting this letter saying, hey, congratulations, you've been awarded a position. I was like, no, this is an error.
Vasiliki tried to fix her clerical error, couldn't, so started her accidental nursing degree. 2 weeks in, she was sent off to her first placement in a hospital in the Southern Highlands. Her experience with patients there sold her for life. She's now been a nurse for more than 20 years. She works in intensive care. She has a PhD in risk prediction. She teaches nursing at university. You never wish you were an engineer instead?
No, I think that sometimes when I'm putting an IKEA table or something together, I'm a little bit frustrated and I realise, no, the universe, you know, God did good in leading me to becoming a nurse rather than an engineer. So
that's fabulous. Being a nurse was not plan A for Kelly either.
I became a nurse by accident. I went to Actors College when I finished school and was like doing musical theatre and drama and working a part-time job, and my sister was a nurse. So she said, you need to do nursing, then you can become like an agency nurse and work whenever you want to so you can still go to auditions. And then I started nursing and I just loved it so much. So I just kind of gave up the acting gig.
Kelly not only became convinced that she should be a nurse, not an actor, but that she should go overseas with an organisation called Mercy Ships.
Mercy Ships is a volunteer organisation. It's a hospital ship and it's a purely a surgical ship. So we don't do medical. We just provide surgery and they follow the 2,000-year-old model of Jesus, which is to bring hope and healing to the forgotten poor. So everybody that is on the ship is a volunteer. We also pay for our time there. So they pay for our, we pay for our food and board to be there and to work there. Yeah, we dock outside a country for 10 months at a time and provide free surgery to those that need it.
Let me get this straight. So most nurses, we feel like, are underpaid, right? They do amazing work and should be paid more. You are doing this like more intense version of it and you're paying to do it?
Yeah, kind of.
Talk me through that. Why do you do it?
I actually had two jobs that I really, really loved. I worked at Sydney Children's Hospital and I worked at Prince Wales Private for a neurosurgeon. I just really felt like I had more than I needed. I had never wanted to go to Africa apart from like a safari. But I saw like a 2-minute clip about Mercy Ships and I signed up before I really knew anything about them. I like emailed my boss straight away and said, do you mind if I take some time off work, a few months? And then, yeah, it went from a few months to a few years.
Unlike with Vasiliki and Kelly, some people do become nurses because they plan to, sometimes from a very early age. This is Lucy. She's been a nurse for 30 years. For 20 of those years, she's been a midwife.
I feel very fortunate because I've always wanted to do it. I've always had that sense of that's what I want to do. I can remember visiting my dad in hospital after an operation when I was about 6 and looking at the nurses in their sort of starched uniforms, moving around the ward really briskly and being absolutely fascinated by them. And as a teenager, I was developed quite a strong faith and sort of thought that I wanted to do something with my life that would help me to be God's hands and feet. And it just seemed like such a practical way to do that, to be able to care for the sick.
Emma Matheson, who's an emergency nurse and also training to be a Baptist pastor, traces her vocation back to an early age too.
Why did I become a nurse in the first place? Well, a couple of things. This is a little bit flippant and a little bit gross, but as a kid, I loved blood and guts and gore. If I saw a bloody wound, I was the first to run and have a look, more because I'm curious. I wanted to see it. And so there was that. But it also comes down to my values. So one of my core values is that every single human being is worthy of love. Every human being is worthy of care. And every human being is valuable. And so I wanted to express that professionally. So the two came together quite nicely, my love for blood and guts and my love for people.
Part 2, pandemic.
Now, for pretty much every person in the world today, COVID-19 has been a wave that came up suddenly and just overwhelmed ordinary life, caught us in the middle of going about our business. If you're a nurse, your business puts you right in the middle of the chaos, one way or another.
It started off, I guess you could say, normal, what you'd kind of expect, especially working in like a critical care setting. You never know what's going to come through the doors. And then obviously with everything that's happened with COVID starting this year, it just took a totally different turn. I don't think anyone expected to see what they've been seeing, and it's long days and just been tough due to all the changes that have been happening.
Jesse is fresh out of his nursing degree, so it's been a pretty strange time to start his career. Timing's been interesting for Emma Sinclair too. She's not new to nursing, but she arrived in the UK, in Southampton, to start a new job in the same week their national lockdown was announced.
It's been interesting to be working in the NHS as a nurse during this time. Obviously, the UK has a big emphasis on protecting the NHS and making sure that we're not overwhelmed. And that was one of the main concerns at the beginning, was that we would be so overwhelmed that we would run out of ICU beds, that we would run out of ventilators for all the COVID patients. And so it's been interesting seeing how the hospital system has dealt with that. Our hospital in particular has been pretty good. We've had a lot of COVID patients, but we haven't been overwhelmed to the point where we've run out of beds. So it's been good. Another main concern is the personal protective equipment, like gowns and masks and things. That's always been a bit of a problem here, that we've kind of been running low on supplies. In many ways, my work hasn't changed because I haven't been looking after COVID patients. I've been doing my normal kind of children's nursing, but at the same time, life in the hospital has been very different for everyone. And as a just someone who's new to the country, obviously it feels a bit odd because I haven't really been able to experience life here very much. And the fact that I've made a few friends when I first got here, but we can't even catch up in person because we're not allowed to. I can go out to exercise once a day, I can go to the supermarket, I can go to work. That's about it.
Back in Sydney, Vasiliki is experiencing firsthand what efforts to cope with this pandemic look like.
I work in the intensive care unit of a major teaching hospital, and we have 5 intensive care units, and one of them has been, well, actually 2 have been converted into what we call COVID land. So I'll tell you one story that resonated with me. This was the first patient I actually nursed with COVID-19. And the good thing is that they are no longer requiring a ventilator to breathe. What shook me was when I was asked to go into COVID land to nurse the patient. They were the same age as me. And so in the media, prior to going into work, I heard stories about, so-and-so elderly resident has died at this aged care facility and they were, X years old and what have you. And then I go to work, first ever shift, COVID land, and I'm landed a patient who's the same age as me. And that really resonated with me and it scared me because I thought, oh my God, if it's happened to this patient, it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone I know.
Kelly from Mercy Ships spoke to me from quarantine, day 7 of 14.
I'm in the Marriott in Darling Harbour.
How do you eat?
They deliver it to the door and then they knock and run.
So you really don't see anybody?
You can see them out the people. You see like the army and the air force and the police like walking past.
Wow, they're like patrolling your hotel corridor.
Yeah, you're supposed to like put your rubbish outside the door and like literally like they obviously can hear you open your door, so then they like jump up and check that you're not trying to escape.
A lot of Australians who've been living or travelling overseas are very relieved to make it home. For Kelly, the arrival of coronavirus meant the total disruption of her work and her plans.
It's very difficult. Like the ship has been my home for 2 years and the people on the ship are my family. And the plan was that I was going to serve for another 2 years. I had committed to the next 2 years and I don't know how long after that. And it's been really difficult to leave. And it's not wise to continue because it's a ship that's run by volunteers that come from all over the world. So that's why we had to shut it down quickly. because it would hurt the people of Senegal more for us to bring, obviously, to bring COVID to Senegal. But to leave is like horrifically painful, like particularly having to discharge our patients in Senegal so quickly. I did have a lot of fear in how are they, like we had to discharge patients that should have been there for months and months. And we had like 160 outpatients and nearly 60 inpatients, like in our hospital still receiving care and still requiring further surgery that we had to discharge within a week.
Part 3, death.
As an emergency nurse, as someone who has seen significant trauma in my work, I find that the language of lament is very important. So not everyone would be familiar with that word, lament, but it's a very important part of some of the writings in the Bible. Like the biggest book in the Bible is the Psalms, and a third of them are lament psalms. And a lament is basically the language you use to express pain and hurt and doubt and sorrow. And you take those words, you take those feelings, and you present them and offer them to God. So for me, as a nurse who experiences and sees trauma, I need an outlet for that. And one of those core outlets is through lament. So if I see a child die or if I see something horrific, then I will bring those words to God. I will bring my grief to God. And as I do, I know that God will hear me. I also know that God is feeling grief around that. And I also know that God is going to walk through this grief and this pain with me.
That's Emma Matheson, who's a pastor as well as a nurse. Midwife Lucy had this to say on death at birth.
Early on in my career, I remember the first stillborn baby I had to deliver, and that sort of has stayed with me forever. But I believe in those moments where it's hard, we're still able to make things better. Even though, you know, there are times that are absolutely hideous for people who are going through them, it's our job to try and make them just even a little bit better. And I guess that makes it worthwhile.
These nurses spoke a lot about presence and the privilege that it is to be there at the end. Of course, in COVID land, they're the only ones allowed there at the end. Here's Vasiliki.
So we have had patients who have died, and what is heartbreaking is that the family were not permitted, which to me is heartbreaking because I come from a Hellenic background. And in my Christian faith, last rites is a requirement. And having a priest come and provide prayer and the family be there to bear witness to you dying. And so to bear witness to patients who are dying and not being able to have whatever their culture requires, whether it be a rabbi attend or a priest attend or a whoever attends, or even to have someone hold their hand, like a family member hold their hand, to me that's been heartbreaking, knowing that that cannot happen for safety reasons. But, yeah, no patient dies alone, and that then puts a huge emotional burden on the nursing and medical staff. No patient dies alone. Yes, I'd like to believe that that's still upheld. What's sad, though, is that it is a nurse or a doctor that is present rather than a family member.
I think my favourite moments in nursing are those rare times where I get to sit with a patient and I get to hear their story, where they share with me something quite vulnerable about their life. It's quite a privilege being a nurse because you are immediately trusted in many cases, not all, but that trust means that you then get to come into those more intimate places with people. And it's a real joy and a real privilege to be there with people. And this might sound very strange, but one of the most intimate places you can be with someone
is at the moment of their death. And it might sound very strange, but I find it a very special time to sit with someone as they approach and enter death. Like, everyone celebrates birth, and that's a wonderful, beautiful thing. But death can be a very special, beautiful moment as well, where the focus is on that person, where they are valued, where they are celebrated for who they are, to partner with them as they end this life and go to the next. I can't put into words what that moment's like, but it's a very special, intimate moment.
Part 4, humans. Emma Matheson of the double vocation, nurse and pastor, talks about what those two professions have in common.
Yes, at first they do seem a little bit weird and they don't seem to gel, but actually there is so much crossover, because the heart of being a nurse is valuing every person and treating them as you would like to treat a loved one, and promoting their health and well-being. And being a pastor is quite similar. It doesn't matter what you think of faith, but the heart of being a pastor is valuing every human being as being very valuable and made in the image of God. And every human being deserves care and love. And that's the heart of being a pastor, which is sharing that love to every human being.
As a midwife, Lucy sees people at some of the rawest, most stripped back moments of their lives.
Most people, it's pretty easy to find a connection with them when they're going through something that's raw and difficult. And you kind of, all the fluff and all the superficial stuff gets pushed away. And I find it quite easy to get a good connection with people, because we're not pretending. So again, I guess that's part of the privilege of being able to see somebody at their most real. Obviously there's so many different personalities. You don't get along with everybody, and sometimes when people are stressed, they're difficult and challenging. And so I don't want to kind of paint that, well, we all have such a lovely time together. And it's there are challenges, but generally I do see it. I feel like I've seen people of many different cultures, colours, religions, and I feel like the essence of us is all the same. Mm. When we are in pain, or when we have great sorrow or great joy, our humanness is the same. Like, we all feel, and that's so, I don't see a lot of difference between us when we're all kind of cut back. Yeah.
Remember Vasiliki, who put down the wrong code for her uni degree and ended up on prac as a nurse in the Southern Highlands instead of a mechanical engineer? Here's one of the stories she told me about what made her stick with her mistake.
There was a patient who was dying, and he was dying of lung cancer, but he was still mobilising and doing things independently. And in my youth, I was a smoker, unfortunately, and I had a packet of cigarettes in my pocket, and he asked me, oh, could I have a cigarette? And I said, look, take the packet. And I didn't think twice about it, because I thought, you're an adult, you're making a conscious, autonomous decision in the interest of yourself. But then he said something which remained with me. He said, thank you for listening to my request. No one has listened to my request since I've been here. You're the only one, and I feel now I can die and be okay with that. Anyway, he ended up dying the next day, and a lot of my nursing colleagues were saying that, you know, oh, you killed him, it was your cigarette, and which was quite confronting as a 17-year-old to hear that, you know, your cigarette contributed to this man's, you know, death. But what I realised, even as a 17-year-old, was that I actually advocated for someone and put their interest and what they were asking first. I guess I want to acknowledge the honour in bearing witness to people's experiences, because it's someone who's actually in a vulnerable position, and to bear witness to that means that we have to honour their experience as well as them.
Part 5, salute.
Here in the UK, obviously, I think everyone really understands the importance of the healthcare system and all the NHS workers. And so there's been a really nice kind of outpouring of support for NHS workers from the public. So every Thursday evening at 8 o'clock, everyone goes and does a clap for carers, which is really cool. Everyone gets out on the street and basically just applauds all the NHS workers, which is a really nice kind of little gesture. It reminds us that we're doing something important and that our work's not going unnoticed. Another thing that people have been doing is putting pictures of rainbows in their windows to kind of show support for the NHS. And so as you walk down the street, nearly every window's got a rainbow in it. And so that's always a really nice kind of gesture as well. So
that's Emma Sinclair's experience in the UK. But Aussie nurses are getting some well-deserved attention too.
It's really nice getting free coffee at Macca's. Like, it's really nice when people do just reach out and just ask if you're going okay and things like that, and just recognising that it is a tough time in that industry. So definitely do appreciate it. And there's people who are, you know, really trying to battle through this on the front line as well, who are making a big difference for a lot of these people's lives. So I think it's, I think a lot of people at work are very grateful getting free delivery of food and things like that, because they don't have time to cook, you know. They're doing a lot of overtime shifts and things like that. So, it's very nice to see.
Nurses are the heroes right now and, you know, maybe always. We asked them, though, what they wish the public knew about their work. What don't the rest of us necessarily get about nursing? Here's Vasiliki, then Jesse again, and lastly, Kelly.
I think it's a really important question, because a lot of the time people in the community have a misperception of what nurses do because of how we're portrayed on television shows. And unless a person's been in hospital and have actually had a nurse look after them, their experience will always be skewed by what they've witnessed on television. There's this actually funny meme from Grey's Anatomy, and it's got a patient being mobilised out of bed, and it's got three doctors mobilising the patient. And underneath it says, yeah, I always have three doctors trying to mobilise my patient, which is quite funny because that is not the reality. Usually it's, you know, physios and nurses helping out. But in healthcare, every discipline is seen as linear. And what should be the emphasis is always what's in the best interest of the patient. And so if we put our ego aside and look at the fact that as healthcare providers, we all have skills, knowledge that we bring to our roles as clinicians in order to work together collaboratively to take care of people who are sick.
For me personally, and I think a lot of other nurses, they take a lot home, and I think they replay a lot of what happened during that day, whether they talk about it or not. So a lot of the time they'll go to sleep thinking about that one patient or those few patients, and so that can be tough, especially when you're worried about them. And a lot of people don't have people to reach out to and things like that. So I think, there's just, it probably plays a bit of a toll on their mind a little bit more than what people think. You know, they might seem really happy because they're people, you know, they're very good with people. But, you know, like, they're still thinking about that one patient in the back of their mind, you know.
I mean, I think people know that we actually do care a lot about our patients, like a lot. We have to be really strong for our patients, because it's not fair for the patient to have to comfort us, especially at the moment with like all the suffering that everybody is seeing. I would hate patients or, you know, family members to think that nurses had become hardened. But sometimes we do have to just push that stuff down so that we can support the patient or we can support the caregivers. But also that it really is the best job in the world. I wouldn't want to do anything else.
This has been Life and Faith from CPX, and Natasha and I had the real privilege, the joy really, of speaking with Vasiliki, Kelly, Lucy, Emma, and Jesse. To these six nurses who made time for us in the midst of everything else going on And to all the nurses out there, we are grateful for you. Now, I'm sure you know a nurse who needs to hear this episode, celebrating all that they do day in and day out, and especially at the moment.
For a bonus, this didn't really fit in the episode, but stick around at the end here to hear Kelly from Mercy Ships talk about miracles and how seeing human suffering used to make her feel disappointed with God, but not anymore.
At CPX, we're working hard to contribute to a positive contribution about faith and meaning and the things that matter. If you'd like to support this cause, go to lifeandfaithpodcast.com to find out more. Next week.
You know, as one of my mentors says, like, but when you come to the edge of mystery and you don't quite know what to do, there's like a little thing in you that can jump. And I'm like, yeah. So that's the piece I've had to cultivate over time, which sometimes has gone quite well. Other times it's not. But I've learned that even when it doesn't go well, I can be okay. I can, and you know, my whole self and identity isn't wrapped up in the business I started or the position I hold now, which has been, you know, kind of a long process of getting to that place too.
I literally have seen miracles. Like this year, I have seen so many miracles. Like I saw a little girl that just stopped breathing and was being resuscitated by like 5 specialists, and nobody could. She was being resuscitated for 2 hours and there was not an answer. And then our surgeon came out and he said, you need to prepare her grandma because we don't know what else to do. And then we did like a ship-wide announcement. We have like an intercom that goes through the whole ship. And we asked everybody in the ship, whatever you're doing, please stop now and pray for this little girl because she's dying basically. And inside the theater, they didn't know that we had done a ship-wide announcement, but everyone stopped and we all prayed and asked that she would live. And she miraculously just started breathing by herself, like complete. And they even did like a whole debrief afterwards, whole medical review, and they still don't know why she stopped breathing and they still don't know why she started breathing. And like that is honestly one of so many examples. And but like when you have nothing else to turn to, God just shows, like it's so much more evident that God has been there the whole time. But when I'm more self-sufficient and I rely on myself, maybe I miss those things, or maybe I become more blind to them. Yeah, but I feel like when there's less of those things to rely on, God is just so much more obvious and his power is so much more evident.